to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, and of course, we are presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven. Joining us tonight from Florida, Southwest Florida, is Bobby Marks, our Cap Insider, front office insider. He's a high-level basketball expert. He's all these insider titles, but is Bobby Marks. Bobby, welcome.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good. By the way, I should mention we are recording this at near midnight on Sunday night, right after the Lakers beat the Rockets, 117-109 to even that series. And joining us from Oklahoma City is Royce Young. Royce, welcome. Hope you're doing well.
I'm doing great, Brian.
Very good. Royce was playing tennis tonight. Did you see Novak Djokovic get thrown out for hitting the line judge?
Yeah, of course. Naturally, that was the first joke we all made, and it was pretty lame by the time the fourth guy showed up. We were like, we've already made the joke. Don't make it. It's already been done.
All right. That was an all-time. Can you imagine if that happened at an NBA game where LeBron thought he was throwing to a ball boy, but instead hit a ref in the neck and they ejected him?
Speaking of Russell Westbrook, he did that. He got a technical foul for throwing the ball at the referee. He claimed it was an accident. I think it was in Charlotte 2 years ago, maybe. He hit him right in the head. I'm trying to remember which referee it was.
Well,
if it's anyone, it'll probably be Scott Foster at the end of the day. So,
well, if the Rockets had been lucky, Russell Westbrook would have hit Scott Foster with the pass tonight and been thrown out because I don't want to take anything away from the Lakers. The Lakers came out with terrific defensive intensity, really good game plan improvement, got production up and down the lineup, excellent performance, championship level performance for sure. Russell Westbrook was absolutely horrible in this game. And the Lakers are playing the Rondo defense on Westbrook, and he is handing them gifts by deciding to shoot. Everybody in the Rockets starting lineup was a plus in plus minus tonight. With the exception of Westbrook, who was a minus 14 in an 8-point loss. Westbrook took 7 3-pointers in this game. He was 1 of 7. He also had 7 turnovers. You want to take a guess the last time Russell Westbrook took 7 3-pointers?
Brian, I was just pulling up the game log because I was about to wonder that out loud. Let's see.
I've already looked it up, but I'll let you.
No, I'm guessing it was back in December is my guess.
That was a hell of a guess. Christmas Day.
Yeah, against the Warriors. Yeah, he took 11 maybe, I'm guessing. That's
8. Bobby, he had taken more than 5 3-pointers one time in 26 games. That whole last third of the season when the Rockets went small and they convinced him to not space the floor and instead attack. You know, basically they had a spacing problem and they fixed it by – convincing him that you're not a spot-up shooter. He took 5 or more threes one time in 26 games. He's taken 5 or more in each of the first two games of this series. And just his gift to the Lakers, even though it's 1-1, has killed the Rockets when he's been out there. It'll be interesting to see what Mike D'Antoni does game 3 and going forward.
Well, yeah. I mean, I just listened to coaches post-game and you know, he's going to defend him, of course, but, and you know, he said, you know, he's still shaking off that rust from being out for, you know, part of those seeding games and playoffs. But the Houston got back in the game when he was on the bench, you know, and they had a 5-point lead in that, I think a 5-point lead to start the fourth quarter or something late in the third quarter there. But yeah, I mean, all 7 attempts. I mean, there was no one near him. I mean, it was kind of like the Rondo defense, right? But it's as we've all seen in this, and Royce, you've seen him for his whole career. It's one speed, right? I mean, there's no second gear here for him to kind of pull back. It's kind of all or nothing.
I mean, one of Westbrook's greatest qualities is he's unafraid, Bobby, and And that's honestly been kind of the playoff defense the teams in recent years have deployed against Westbrook. The Jazz, the Blazers, even the Thunder did it at times. I mean, if anybody knows what defense to play on Westbrook, it's the Thunder. But as you try to turn Russell Westbrook into his own worst enemy, and you try to kind of invert that fearlessness to him. In the fourth quarter, I just looked. I think it's right. He took 3 of his 7 in the fourth quarter, and that's kind of Westbrook's MO, is that when his team starts to slip, he is the guy that it's not selfishness. I've always tried to tell people it's not really selfishness with Westbrook. It's just a fine. I got to do this by myself then. Like, I'll just do it. And he really just takes that burden upon himself. And it's one of his greatest qualities, I think, because when it succeeds, oh man, is it glorious. I mean, Russell Westbrook at the peak of his powers in clutch time, I mean, there's few like him, but the problem is it is like woefully inconsistent. And you see these types of implosions like he had in the fourth quarter, where he tries to do way too much. And basically what he tries to do, Brian, is he tries to shoot a 10-pointer. That's what Westbrook's trying to do half the time, is that he feels like his threes, he's going to crank one and it's going to turn the tide.
James Harden, 12 shots, Russell Westbrook, 15. And I know the Harden it's a little bit hidden because of free throws. Harden doesn't get shot attempt charges or whatever when he gets the line, but that's a huge victory for the Lakers when that happens. And frankly, I know that the Rockets probably feel pretty good about themselves because, like, okay, well, the series is 1-1 and, Russ has not been good. Even he scored 24 in game one, but he wasn't efficient. And again, they want him to play that way. The Rockets probably like, this is okay. It's 1-1, but they go 22 of 53 on threes tonight. Now you got to win that game.
Yeah.
Listen to these 3-point shooting. PJ Tucker, 4 of 7. Robert Covington, 4 of 8. Eric Gordon, 6 of 12. James Harden, 4 of 8. Daniel House, 3 of 7. That's a win by 18-30 performance. The Lakers shot the ball very well as a team, which we'll talk about in a second. Rockets defense, which had been very strong throughout the playoffs, let them down a little bit. But, for the Lakers to survive that shooting night, they survived it, frankly, because of Westbrook. And it'll be interesting to see what D'Antoni does. Swiping over to the Lakers, had to have it, falling down 2-0. It's obviously not impossible. One of the incredible stats that I heard the last couple of days is that LeBron is 11-8 in series in his career when he loses game one. And I was like, wow, he's had 20 series where he's lost game one. He's a man who's played in a lot of series. In other words, it was like, don't panic. He's not panic when he's down, 1-0, but, they played with incredible, like I said, just incredible defensive energy, especially in the first and fourth quarters, held the Rockets to 37 points. Bobby, while Mike D'Antoni was playing Russell Westbrook and the Rockets fans were slapping their heads, Frank Vogel relied heavily on Rajon Rondo tonight, which, he hurt them a lot in game one. Rondo plays 29 minutes, 4 of 9 from the field. He was not being covered. He did have a couple of shots where he took advantage of it. But here's where he really got 9 assists, 5 steals, including some ball hawking on James Harden, which I think kind of slowed him down a little bit. Plus 28 on the plus minus. Rondo played great. And then Markieff Morris, the Lakers, any one of their role players shoots the ball well, and it's like manna from heaven. And they get 4 3-pointers and 16 points from Markieff Morris. Those two players, were a difference in the game.
Well, yeah, I mean, Markieff in the first quarter, certainly gave him separation. I think he hit, 4 threes in a row there?
That's right.
And then Rondo, is kind of, he's that lightning rod. I mean, like, it's either going to go one way or another, and there's no in between there. And hit a big shot. I mean, Houston had cut it to 6, I think 113-107, and hit a shot in the lane to kind of basically ice the game. But you're right. I mean, out of the bench guys, I mean, Alex Caruso played 26 minutes too, Brian. I mean, his minutes you know, what do you, you're looking at a, you know, Deion Waiters goes out with a groin injury. So now you basically have two guards coming off your bench in Rondo and Caruso right now.
So, yeah, Frank Vogel had a choice in this game because PJ Tucker has been pretty effective all year on Anthony Davis. So his choice was he could either try to match down a little bit, reduce the big man minutes, play Caruso more, which Caruso was limited in game one because of foul trouble. People were complaining about it. Only played 16 minutes, but part of that was because he had five fouls in 16 minutes. Play Caruso more. And in this, and you know, maybe make room for Deion Waiters, who he did play in the rotation, but Waiters got hurt. Or he could play big more, expand JaVale McGee's minutes. And that would force PJ Tucker to be on JaVale McGee more and force an easier matchup on Covington or Eric Gordon or Jeff Green or whomever they put on him when PJ Tucker was out of the game. Sort of, you know, not trying to beat fire with fire, but matching big. And Vogel went with the first. He decided to stay small, only did not play Dwight Howard at all. Only played JaVale McGee 8 minutes. JaVale went out with an ankle injury. He's getting an MRI tonight. Must be something significant. But even if he hadn't been injured, I don't think he would have played a lot more. And, you know, it worked. And Anthony Davis, you know, he can get whatever he wants in this series. Even though PJ Tucker is effective on him, there is enough ways to get him the ball in space where you either are going to get him in a huge matchup advantage or he is going to draw a double team and kick it and you're going to get a good shot somewhere. And so Anthony Davis, to me, I said last week that he needs to kind of average like 32 or 34 and 15. Tonight he had 34 and 10. That's very good. He's shooting 25 of 40 in the series, but he needs to play even a higher level. So Royce, again, it'll be interesting to see if this, you know, especially if JaVale McGee is out, if he continues to match down and want to play small and go, you know, strength on strength, I guess.
Well, this is what Billy Donovan kind of resisted doing in the series before, right? He kind of wanted to stay bigger. There were times where he would go with Danilo Gallinari at the five, and the Rockets struggled with it at times. So, you know, I think it makes sense logistically, but I think what is kind of happening and what played out in the Thunder series, and I think is what kind of played out in game two, Brian, is that when you're a team that has these options for adjustments and you give, you know, Frank Vogel has the option for an adjustment. He can play big, he can play small. Billy Donovan has that option, and you feel it out throughout the game, and you're, you know, the coach has to make the decision at that point. Mike D'Antoni has one way, right? There's no adjustment for the Rockets to make. They're going to play small. It's just a matter of if it's PJ Tucker at the five or Jeff Green at the five, essentially.
But since you mentioned Billy Donovan,
What
is anybody in Oklahoma City talking about his status for next season?
Yeah, there's people wondering. There's definitely people wondering about what he's a free agent, technically, you know?
Bobby, I don't mean to go off the time because I'm about to talk. I don't mean to go off the Lakers here because I'm about to talk about LeBron, but Billy Donovan, I believe, is a free agent.
I believe you're correct.
No one talked about it all year.
That's correct.
There's jobs open, I believe. Last I checked, there were jobs open.
There still are.
It's kind of like, do you ever remember there being two playoff coaches who were free agents who like got to the end of their contract?
Well, no. I mean, and especially
Mike D'Antoni is the other one.
Yeah, and I think Daryl had talked to, I think it was USA Today, that my, you know, which I had thought, we all thought probably if they lose last week to Oklahoma City that Mike's gone. Now Daryl came out and said that he's priority A to bring back, you know, as far as,
what's he going to say, though?
Yeah, I know, that's true.
I mean, yeah, it was USA Today. I'm not criticizing. Yeah, we can't wait to get rid of him. That would have been like, you know, oh, really? Oh, okay. I think he's doing a really good job. I have no idea why they wouldn't re-sign him. I mean, but
well, he'll have his choice if they don't, right?
Yeah, I mean, I just – Billy Donovan's a free agent.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm going to say. LeBron in this game, tremendous overall performance. Just one for the files, probably his 98th best playoff game, somewhere in there, you know.
But where does it rank in his game twos, Brian, when he was down 1-0?
Well, he's been down 1-0 20 times. Okay. I'd have to review 20 of those.
It's a top 20. You're telling me that. Okay.
Yeah. Top 20. It's actually probably not even in his top 20 of game twos, but it's maybe borderline. You know, he had a game two where he hit a shot at the buzzer to win Eastern Conference Finals.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably number one. So he goes for 28 points, 11 rebounds, 9 assists, 4 steals. Also had 7 turnovers. But early in the fourth quarter, Anthony Davis is on the bench. The Rockets had taken the lead. He comes out and plays 4 devastating LeBron minutes, dunking, driving, pressuring, rebounding, assisting. And I know that it drives some Lakers fans crazy, Bobby, that Rondo gets minutes. But one of the reasons why that they have to play Rondo, and even though, yes, they don't guard him and it makes it easier to double-team Anthony Davis, but one of the reasons that Frank Vogel is playing Rondo is because they need to cheat on possessions where LeBron does not have to initiate the offense. So LeBron is leading the league in average in fourth quarter minutes in the playoffs. Now, I know he hasn't played as many minutes as guys on the Nuggets have, but his average is high up there. And one of the things that LeBron has learned to do over the years is to rest while he's playing. And so they need to have Rondo out there to take some plays from him. And I see the Lakers fans complaining about this. Why is Rondo bringing the ball up? Rondo is bringing the ball up so LeBron can do a little bit of resting so that he has the energy in that fourth quarter. And it doesn't always going to work. But I think that extra energy tonight was helped by the fact that Rondo was able to carry some of the load and get those 9 assists earlier in the game.
Well, he played 39 minutes, and I felt, Brian, that the tail end of that fourth quarter, he could have probably played another 10 minutes. I mean, he was fresh, right? I mean, you know, he was like – it was almost like flipping a switch as far as from the first quarter to the end of the fourth quarter here, and you're right about stealing those minutes. I mean, you're not going to expect, you know, A-level LeBron for 40 minutes here. It's kind of, as you said – with Rondo on the court, he's kind of, you know, he's stealing some, you know, from minutes from LeBron here. And what Frank Vogel has right now, he's got a limited hand. I mean, as far as where he is going to, and yeah, as we talked earlier, Rondo is going to, it will infuriate you here, but at the end of the day is it's to win games and to have LeBron and AD on the court in the last, you know, 6 or 7 minutes here and both kind of being, as I said, being fresh.
Well, people say, Brian, that, you know, the ball has energy. The ball also drains energy when you have it in your hands all the time. And, you know, you see it from a lot of primary ball handlers. This is why they've wanted to kind of link up with other primary ball handlers. Chris Paul has said it before that, like, you know, that's one of the reasons he wanted to go play with James Harden, was that he got sick of bringing it up all the time. He didn't want to have to initiate every single possession because that can wear you out. And, you know, LeBron James, for as much of an alien as he is in basically every physical way, like, it's going to drain you when you have to, it's mentally and physically, when you have to initiate every single possession. So, like you said, I think that it's and at what point of the game do you want LeBron at his very best, at the peak of his powers, fourth quarter? So, you know, I could understand the frustration. But, heck, Rondo hit a big mid-range jumper early in the fourth quarter. So, you know, take
that's
that.
Why LeBron loved playing with Kyrie. Well, I shouldn't say he loved it, but that was why it was so good for him playing with Kyrie.
Yeah.
Is that he could throw the ball over to Kyrie and Kyrie could cook. Kyrie preferred to be the one to choose. that was a problem, but boy, were they good together when they were.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So the Milwaukee Bucks, you know, truth be told, we were, you know, plotting this podcast on maybe doing a Bucks obituary. But they staved off elimination in a surprising way after Giannis turns his ankle. Giannis left the game in a walking boot. And I have suspended disbelief on ankle injuries after Luka came back and had that game after turning his ankle hard over in the first round, Bobby. But typically when I see a guy in a walking boot, that is not a minor ankle injury. So, okay, we're in elimination game. We're talking about the MVP. Anything could happen, but he's either going to be, not be able to play or severely limited or limited in some way, probably in the game five against the Heat. And that is why that so many people are wondering what his short-term future is going to be. I know that you have looked at this extensively. What is your feel as to what the short-term future for Giannis and the Bucks are, assuming they don't pull a miracle in this series?
Well, yeah, I mean, and we've got an article ready to go when it their off-season article.
Yeah, I don't want you to steal from that.
Actually, we got a part one and part two coming down the road. Whenever this is going to be,
I'm sorry, Bucks fans.
Oh, I tell you what, they hate me. I mean, I just said, well, I teased them a little bit too, Brian, because I said, you know, I always say, like, here's your off-season article, and then I say, well, Milwaukee will wait for another day, and you know, you come back, it's the whole bias, the Midwest bias, right? You know, you guys want Giannis out of Milwaukee. You want him to, why doesn't anybody ever talk about AD in LA? And he, you know, he's a free agent. Nobody talks about him. And I said, well, I said, Giannis has got a $220+ million decision to make. And if he doesn't sign this extension, yeah, it's a story, right? Like, it's a story for as long as he's in Milwaukee. And yeah, I mean, that's whenever free agency starts. If it's in November or December, that will be the number one decision for him to make as far as, is he going to sign this Supermax extension? Is he going to play out the year? I don't see Milwaukee, if he does play out the year, I do not see Milwaukee trading him unless he comes to them and says, I want to get traded.
I can't see it.
And I won't give away the story, but the one thing I mentioned in the article is, and I said is, if you had to take the best, you know, what, you know, the MVP of the league for 1 year on your team, right, would you do it? And you had a team that could potentially compete for a championship, kind of like what Kawhi Leonard did in Toronto. And I think if you're Milwaukee, you're going to roll the dice there unless he comes and says, I don't want to be there. But
which I don't see him doing.
Yeah, I think too, guys, is that, you know, what happens in the next couple months with how the league sets the salary cap? And it's not going to be just for 2021. It's going to be probably for 21-22. It's going to be a seismic shift here, right? Like, you know, if this thing stays flat, I mean, you basically start to eliminate a lot of teams. Of course, you have Miami still kind of in that driver's seat, but it makes it a little bit harder for Dallas now. It certainly eliminates probably the Lakers. Toronto has the big decision with Fred VanVleet as far as where their room is going to go. So just
to expand on that a little bit, right now the salary cap is at $109 million.
Yeah.
Because of the salary cap is determined by the revenue. Because of falling revenues, instead of the cap going up towards 120, what was the projection? We were all living in
21-22 is supposed to be 125. This upcoming year for next season, it was 115.
Right. So as teams were plotting their Kawhi recruitment strategy, they were thinking that they had we're going to have about $125 million to work with. If they only have 109,
yeah,
it's a significant difference. Royce, you know, I mean, I lived it myself in the LeBron wars, but. Mm-hmm. You know, being in Oklahoma City, what it's like to be under the gun of superstar free agency. It's like a weight around your ankle as a fan base and as an organization. And I don't think there's any, I suppose Milwaukee could rally out of this series. But I don't think they're winning the championship this year. I don't think they're getting to the finals. And short of that, the clock will start banging on the wall immediately after this season ends. It's a hard thing for a franchise to go through.
Yeah. Well, you know, as Bobby was running that down, Brian, that's immediately where I started thinking was the season leading up to Kevin Durant's free agency. And the significant difference here is this Supermax extension, right? That didn't exist for Kevin Durant. And
well, it exists because Durant.
Exactly. Exactly. So, but, you know, and, you know, it's been well documented by many people about kind of the inverse effect that it has had at times where it does, it almost creates more anxiety than originally was there because it gives
because
that
it,
a player pre-decision.
Right. Becomes the pressure comes a year earlier.
Right. And so there's kind of a decision to be made there. And it's so the incentive is so financially driven that it's like, if they're not taking that, then what is going to lead them to stay?
Well, that's the Anthony Davis situation.
DeMarcus
Anthony
Cousins.
Said no.
Yeah. You know, like, a lot of players have gone through that. Right.
So I remember I went to New Orleans in the preseason of last year. And I spent time with Anthony. I spent time with Dell Demps, their GM at the time. I spent time with Alvin Gentry. And I remember thinking, these poor bastards. Because I was pretty sure he was going to want to leave, but I could feel in the air their stress. And I've seen it before, and I guess sometimes it works out, but I could feel their stress. And that, I'm sorry, is coming from Milwaukee, fair or not, Royce.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though, Brian. And like Bobby said, I think when you zoom out and you try to kind of take a perspective-based look on it, if you asked the Thunder, would you do it all over again, exactly knowing what you know now with Kevin Durant? They would say, yep, 10 out of 10 times. We'd do it exact same way because they view it as they were 4 minutes from the NBA Finals. And they would take that shot over and over and over again to be 4 minutes from the NBA Finals and 13 Klay Thompson threes or whatever it was that took for them to not be there. You know, they felt like they had the team capable of doing it. And look, credit goes to Kevin Durant for whatever you want to think about it, the decision he made to go join the Warriors. That season was basically devoid of noise. There wasn't much of it. There was some speculation from media, but there was very little coming out of like the Durant camp or other teams. Now, there was a little bit. The first time he went out to Golden State, Woj had a report about that the Warriors were a team that were interested in him, right? But for the most part, it was not like this distraction-laden year where Durant was getting just bombarded and reports were coming out and will they trade him? What do they have to do with him? It was very clear. Look, Kevin Durant handled his business well on the inside. Thunder handled theirs. It was professional. And really, Kevin Durant handled it the way he's kind of supposed to handle it. He became a free agent and he made a choice. Like, that's the way, like, there was no, like, do they got to trade him leading up to it? And
you know who would do it differently? The Cavs, because they did do it differently.
Yeah.
When LeBron was coming to the end of the contract the second time, and he wouldn't extend, they traded Kyrie Irving for a draft pick instead of a player. Mm-hmm. Because they were like, no, we're not going to be caught in this again. Situations are obviously not exactly apples to apples, and I'm not relitigating that, but the Cavs did not treat it the same, getting a second chance at it. It's one thing I'm going to say about – I'm going to say two things about this situation. Number one, I don't know Giannis well, okay? But – Giannis is not like LeBron. He is not like Durant. He is not like Anthony Davis. Who else qualifies in this? Dwight Howard. He did not grow up playing AAU basketball. Okay. He has not been on Team USA. Okay. His American hometown is Milwaukee. He essentially grew up as his American experience is in Milwaukee. That doesn't mean he has never been to Los Angeles. Doesn't mean he has never been to Miami. Okay. But in some ways, Milwaukee feels like his hometown. Okay. So comparing, that doesn't mean anything. I mean, that's, by the way, that's what the people in Milwaukee say.
I think it does, Brian. I think it means something.
Well, but what I'm saying here is that there's an assumption that, like, other players who've been in this situation, he's going to say, get me out of here. I just don't think he's built that way. And that's what people in Milwaukee will say. I think he actually has a pretty close relationship with Mike Budenholzer. I don't think he's interested in saying, get this guy out of here or anything like that. But I'm going to say something else. Bobby, I know that occasionally people in the NBA come to you to consult because you're in an interesting situation. You have 20 years experience in the front office. You have expertise, but you don't work for any team right now. So you are sort of an unbiased individual. Once you take that shirt off that has a team logo on it and put one on that says ESPN, you then become easier to talk to for the other 29 teams. I don't know if you charge these people for coming to for advice.
My wife would like me to.
Yeah.
I thought, except for the Bucks, though, Bobby. I thought that you hated them specifically.
You hate everybody who's obit you do for the next 20 months. Looking at this objectively, knowing that Giannis can get the exact same contract in this, most likely in the summer of 2021 as he can get in 2020, he will still be supermax eligible in 2021. Yes, he would protect himself on injury, but he is 25, and I don't think there's any injury he could have that would keep him from getting the supermax from Milwaukee. I don't see objectively in a vacuum what benefit he has personally from extending this summer, this offseason. I just think it would be an incredible gift to the Bucks organization, and maybe he wants to do it. But if he came to you and asked for your advice, you would say what?
I'd say play it out.
I think it's the only, objectively, it's the only correct decision. And by the way, I would probably say that even if they were in the finals.
Yeah, I would say play it out, Brian, just because of the injury factor. And I think we saw with Kevin Durant that franchise players with, you know, even with a significant injury, and I know people are probably saying we're DeMarcus Cousins. I don't put DeMarcus Cousins up in that A-list franchise player, but there's always a market for those guys. If you were coming off a knee or an Achilles and you're going to be a free agent, there's going to be someone sitting there waiting for with a $140 or $150 million contract. Okay. So I'm not caught up in the whole supermax $230 million contract because although it is a lot of money and it's going to be, and it's going to be waiting for him in 2021, there's ways that you can get around that where, if you want to go to another team and sign these short-term deals and then kind of make up the money in the third year, you could go out and do that here. So if I was him, I would play out the year. You have basically the same roster coming back here. You get a better landscape as far as where this team is going to go. And I always say that it's not about 2020, 21, or even 21, 21, 22. Like once you make that 5-year commitment and it's 5 years, it's not 3 years or 4 years. Like you are locked in to that group there as far as having a comfort level. And there's like three or four questions that he should ask himself as far as, what's the commitment from ownership, right? We saw last year what happened with Malcolm Brogdon. They didn't want to retain him because of the luxury tax. They deemed him as a luxury, right? That's what the ownership already came out and said that. What's going to happen with the coach? You know, we've seen a lot of coaches get fired who have won 70, 75% of games. I mean, shoot, in New Jersey, we fired Byron Scott and we went to two finals in a row.
Right.
So, you know, what's going to happen with the coach? As I would say, the resources to build up the roster. So I don't think just because he's supermax eligible that he should sign right off the bat. Or do I think just because he doesn't sign it, that all of a sudden is the red, there's the alarms all of a sudden go off.
Well, and but that's what's going to happen.
I know mm-hmm. that's going to happen. That's the world we live in that's going to happen. I know. But I don't think, and I don't, as we talked said earlier, I don't think they will not trade him unless he comes and asks to be traded, right? Like, or there's a sense that, you know, Miami's waiting for him and that, you know, they get information that he's going to go to Miami in 2021. I don't even know if I'd still trade him then. You know, I think I would just play out this year here.
Mm-hmm. I have two thoughts on this, though, real quick. That on the one hand, you know, Bobby was talking about how, you know, if he signs that deal, he locks himself in. But kind of in this modern era, Bobby, I almost feel like contracts don't really exist with a lot of these guys. And that, like, while, you know, tangibly, yes, you have a 5-year contract with the Milwaukee Bucks, all it takes is one little trade request and a little bit of leverage, yeah, and you're finding your way somewhere else. So in some ways, you can kind of have your cake and eat it too. You can go get your like security. Somewhat,
because if you sign the Supermax, you are not eligible to be traded.
For a year.
For a year. Yeah. I mean, you can play out a year, but I mean, like, you know, the Thunder threw a party for Paul George and we're trading him a year later, you know, for like, you know, it was this triumphant moment of like re-signing a franchise level player. And then you trade him. I mean, it's just kind of, contracts are just not as meaningful as they were. And then the other side of it is, I think a lot of this, you know, this is kind of exterior stuff with Giannis, which is natural. He has reached that level of player. He's going to be a two-time MVP. He is an icon level guy where we have to have these conversations about legacy and him and what's next for him. But I mean, I think a lot about a guy like Damian Lillard where, you know, he may not be at the level of Giannis, but it's just Damian Lillard's like, Portland's my team. I'm signing it. I'm staying. You build your roster around me. And I think we're kind of making the assumption that Giannis like wants more. He wants new market, new team, new players, super team, whatever.
I just don't think you can make that assumption.
Right, exactly. And so, I mean, like Giannis could also build like the legacy of the greatest player in Milwaukee Bucks franchise history. And maybe that's important to him. Well, I mean, it's not like he's on some bad team. His teams are going to be good no matter what. And I also wonder, Brian, like, you know, does this unique situation factor in for him? You know, the Bucks, if COVID doesn't happen, I mean, a lot of things change, but like the Bucks were the best team in the NBA statistically. Like they were overwhelmingly great. And did the hiatus disrupt them? And, you know, and then everything that happened with them, you know, with the postponement, I mean, there's a lot of exterior factors, I think, that have kind of gone into this Bucks year. And maybe that factors in and there's a new perspective for Giannis.
I just remember 2009 Cavs, 66 wins.
True.
A terrible matchup for them against the Orlando Magic. They had gone 8-0 the first two rounds of the playoffs. Wasn't like they were a bad – they weren't built for the playoffs. They were just really poorly built for the Magic. Magic knock them out 4-2. Could have easily been 4-1. And their heart is in their throat about LeBron because he's going into the last year of his deal, and they panic trade for Shaquille O'Neal.
Mm-hmm.
And
what's the Bucks panic trade for Chris Paul? is that what they're – I don't know. I've been thinking about that one.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
I love when you throw these thunder. Where would Chris Paul be traded to?
I think I look at three teams. Bobby knows better than me, but I look at three teams as the most likely destinations: that Philly, New York, Knicks, and Milwaukee. Those are the three teams that I think are logical places.
Well, I think the day of having to attach things to Chris Paul are over.
Yeah, exactly.
think so?
Yeah, I think so.
By the way, I mean, as great as he was this year, I think the Thunder, if they get anything, they trade him.
Yeah, I mean, this is their time to sell high, right? Yeah. Like this strike while the iron's hot.
Sell high. Sell, period.
Yeah, well, I mean, and if you saw Chris Paul's farewell video, that's essentially what it was to me on Twitter, of where he was kind of saying, like, thanks for the year, guys.
That's the thing with how Sam Presti has built, and Royce, you're the expert with them, how they built their rosters. They just kind of turn guys over, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they never, like, as I said with, like, Schroeder and Steven Adams, like, they're not going to go into 21 with $50 million in cap space, right? Like, they're going to turn those guys into maybe an extension or another player. It just kind of – it just the wheels keep on going here, and it's not like Chris is just going to – that $44 million is going to expire off the books. He will probably turn into something else here.
Yeah. There's a through line that you can connect – to basically like Kurt Thomas or even further back from that with the Thunder. I mean, like that, like they basically take a player and turn him into like a 25-year asset. I mean, that's what they do. I mean, while a lot of people thought like they should, wave Carmelo Anthony, stretch and wave that dude, it turned into Schroeder. And, you know, I don't know what they're going to get for a guy like Schroeder, but like that's what they do. So, yeah, I mean, they're not going to let
Chris Paul walk. Here's a little interesting nugget. It would be interesting, Bobby, if after not paying Malcolm Brogdon, after not wanting to pay Malcolm Brogdon, and then really suffering from that lack of playmaking at guard, that the Bucks went and traded for Chris Paul and paid him $40 million. I don't even know what that trade would even have to look like.
I don't know.
You know what somebody told me, Brian, and they made it. It was I know all roads lead back to Thunder here for me, but they kind of said that the Brogdon trade is like the poor man's Harden trade. It could be like that for the Bucks, you know, in some ways. Like, it's obviously not as impactful, but it could be the type of thing where they look back on it and be like, that was kind of a financially driven move. And they didn't pay the guy, and things kind of looked different for them in the postmortem of making that trade.
Well, you know, nothing can be taken just in a vacuum. The concept of they let Malcolm Brogdon walk. What happened was they were worried about his injury history, and they preferred Eric Bledsoe.
Yeah. Yeah, they had extended Eric, right? Because mm-hmm. in the middle of the, I think in March.
I would just say that year. You know, Eric Bledsoe is represented by Rich Paul. And
I love when
Rich Paul's lead negotiator is a guy named Mark Termini, who's been an agent for 30 years.
Oh yeah,
or so.
Yeah, Kevin Edwards when I was in New Jersey. That was the first. I think that was the first guy I ever picked up at the airport.
Mark Termini was the first guy you picked up.
No, Kevin Edwards.
Oh, Kevin Edwards. Okay.
The Paul's finest.
So Mark Termini has a long reputation of being a rock to negotiate against. Okay. One of his signature moves was he held Jim Jackson out until March. He was a rookie when he got drafted by Dallas, and he held Jim Jackson out until March, back before there was a rookie scale and there could be holdouts. If Rich Paul and Mark Termini agree to a contract extension before a guy gets to free agency, I would advise you not to sign that extension if you're the team, because that means that they think it's a better deal they can get in free agency. And I'm telling you, nobody is going to have out researched the market. Now, he may not win every negotiation, but I'm going to tell you, nobody will have worked harder to research the market than Mark Termini. So when Eric Bledsoe signed that contract extension, it was great for Eric Bledsoe and the Bucks are obviously happy, but I was like, wow. Rich did not let him go to free agency. He must think this is a great deal, because Rich is unrelenting. You know, Rich and Termini held out Tristan Thompson into November, J.R. Smith until December. I don't even remember. Felt like December, whatever it was. And they didn't even let Bledsoe get to free agency. So that was the real decision. They took Bledsoe over Brogdon. Mm-hmm. You can't just say let Brogdon walk, because it wasn't them being cheap per se. Because they and then they also re-signed
Ibaka George over Hill. Harden. You know, I mean, you can that's the same type of thing.
Well, that's another story.
I know.
The thing about that is they didn't use their amnesty, but we're not going down that path.
I know.
It would just be interesting. Now, here's the thing about a lot of people connect the Knicks to Chris Paul because of the Leon Rose connection. Was his agent. I think the Knicks are kind of tanking next year, Bobby. Do they want Chris Paul? I think they want a high pick in the 2021 draft, but I don't know. Maybe they want to play in 2021 free agency, and having Chris Paul on the roster would help them do that.
Yeah, I mean, you're inheriting $41 and $44 million. I mean, that's kind of what's coming in there, and that takes away all your room this year, and maybe even takes away most of your room for 21 because of if the cap, as we said, stays at $109 million here. So yeah, I mean, I think you connect the dots because of Leon in New York, but you know, there's another team that's got the Dallas picks and the Porzingis trade. They got young players here. And then they also have that money that can kind of just slide in here. But I think if you're looking at getting Chris, it's kind of more of like, how does he influence? I mean, Royce, you see it in Oklahoma City mm-hmm. with the younger players there and how good he has been from a leadership standpoint. You know, what is that? How do they factor in and how do they weigh that compared to, you know, all that money they've got to take back?
Yeah, I mean, the Knicks kind of have this, like, we have adults in the room type of, like, mentality right now, right? Like, there's kind of a cultural reset, it seems like, that's going on, and nothing really emphasizes that, like, getting Chris Paul. who did an unbelievable job in Oklahoma City, like you mentioned, Bobby, with the young players, from a leadership perspective within the organization. I mean, he virtually coaches the team half the time. You know, he just kind of enhances your organization in a holistic sense. Yeah, he's 35 and he's owed, you know, a crap ton of money coming up, which is.
Well, and it's funny too, Royce, because we'll have like that. He'll probably, hopefully doesn't, but he'll like sustain like a hamstring next year. And we're like, oh man, that contract's terrible.
Right. That's the thing. He was unbelievably healthy throughout this year. I mean,
that's why I think the Thunder will be willing to take the phone call.
Yeah. He missed one game all year long.
It's amazing. Yeah, it's like almost like,
and it was by his choice. It was after Kobe.
They both, that's right. They both needed each other. Chris Paul needed the Thunder, and the Thunder needed Chris Paul. They both maximized that, and now maybe they should move on. Would the Thunder like Al Horford? I know that they tried to sign him a few years ago when Billy Donovan first got there, and he went to Boston instead. I mean, they've got Steven Adams, who's extension eligible this summer, but I keep saying this summer. The summer is over.
Right.
This fall.
Might be a winner.
Might be the winner. You're right. Would they take Al Horford? Because, you know, can you imagine Chris Paul like ordering Joel Embiid around?
Yeah.
ordering Ben Simmons around. I mean, it might actually work.
I mean, look, the Thunder are going to have to take salary back in some regard. I mean, that's just the nature of the deal. You know, I think the years would be a concern. What does Horford have left? 3 years now after this?
Two guaranteed, Bobby?
Yeah, he's got two guaranteed, and then the last year it's half, and then if it's got some trigger dates as far as getting to like the NBA finals and winning a championship. Yeah, it's like I think he's got like 70 guaranteed.
But if you attach a pick or you know young player something, and basically you just extend the asset of Chris Paul again, right? Which is an extension of Russell Westbrook. So like that's essentially what you're doing, and you know I think the Thunder would probably view somebody like Horford as again a good cultural fit within their organization. You know I don't know if he's like a tankable player because you know by all appearances once the Thunder make the move to move on from Chris Paul, that's kind of when they're going to hit their reset button. That's when I think they'll start tearing down some of the pieces. Schroeder will go, Adams might go, and they'll start to you know sort of begin their first ever rebuild since they moved to Oklahoma City. I don't know how Horford would fit into that. They may try to then look to move on again. It may just kind of be recycling those types of pieces over and over again.
That's one of the big, you know, I don't think we're going to see a lot of action in free agency. Of course, now we probably will, but I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of movement. The trade market's where the big movement in the offseason is going to be. And Chris Paul is one of the big things out there for sure. And I also think that there's, you know, Bobby, I think there's six or seven teams that are really primed to make a deal, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So not for Chris Paul, but like, you know, that are, you know, Philly.
Oh, yeah. Philly Brooklyn. Example, yeah, Brooklyn.
Philly's going to make some deal, yeah. I would assume.
Yeah, Brooklyn's going to make a move, right? For sure.
I would think.
Yeah.
I would think.
Winning is an everyday mindset. And on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Before we go, Andrew Hahn would not let me post this podcast if he found out in the last week that our Bobby Marks went to high school with David Blaine.
High school? I went to grammar school with him too.
Okay.
I even slept over his house. How's that sound?
Okay.
Oh boy.
Royce, Andrew has not been able to stop talking about this. I honestly think he finds this more fascinating than if he had found out that Bobby was married to Kim Kardashian.
Hey, I did go to her wedding then.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Like, I would. I think he honestly would have felt that was more amazing.
I mean, look, I've sat at many a table with Bobby, and he'll just kind of casually start rattling off these stories that are just like blowing your mind of like just unbelievable NBA experiences, and then. Just to top it off, he's like, "Oh yeah, I know David Blaine."
I mean, like, so, well, you know, I'm under orders. I don't have a choice, Bobby.
So real name is David Bucalo. For anyone out there who calls him David Blaine, but yeah, I grew up with him.
Did you call him Bucalo? Hey, Bucalo, get over here.
Yeah, so, I actually sent Andrew.
That's the kind of name that you would call somebody.
I actually sent Andrew a picture from when we played football in fifth grade from the team picture of him smack dab right in the middle there, number 15. With his bushy dark hair. But yeah, he did not do magic in grammar school. I think he started to do it towards the tail end of high school here.
Did he play high school football? Because you could see like
he played high school football. Yeah.
Quarterbacks back to pass.
Yeah.
The ball's gone.
The ball's gone.
We don't know where the ball. Wait a minute. Blaine has the ball in the end zone. How did Blaine get to the end? Wait a minute.
But here,
he's levitated to the end zone.
Defensive backfield.
So here's a funny story, though, real quick, is that in back during the pandemic, the where we went to school, they asked me to do like one of those video tributes to like the graduating seniors or eighth graders, whatever. And I said, sure. So they sent me the copy and I felt like I was like going to be like the A-list celebrity. And I was number one, like two on the list. And then all of a sudden, here he comes.
Defeated guy.
Number four. David Bucalo / Blaine. I was defeated.
Oh man. So if he saw you, Bobby, would he be like, Bobby, what's up, man?
Yeah. I think the last time I saw him was at a Knicks game.
That's amazing. Yeah. Wow.
Well, Andrew, there's your David Blaine. I think he was hoping for like
I don't have any magic stories.
He took your lunch money out of your back wallet and took
your
watch.
No, it was a good. It's a good relationship. There's no magic's going to be preached on me. I'm not going to disappear because I was mean to him in high school.
Now, David Blaine is very well known, in addition to magic, for dating some models and women of that caliber. How did he?
He was dating a singer. I forgot who her name was. And I think when he first started out. But
did he use magic to?
I would say I would say there's probably a difference between playing football for high school compared to doing magic on Broadway or burning yourself alive or floating over to the Grand Canyon with balloons.
Didn't he like hold his breath for like five? Wasn't that one of his things? Is that even magic? I don't even know. I don't know. We blurred
the
line.
It's an illusion. It's an illusion, Royce.
Illusion. Illusion. That's true. Okay. Yeah. Would he tell you? Would he tell you the secret of one if you asked?
He would not tell me the secret. No,
can't do that. Okay, no. Bobby doesn't tell him the secret to the cellar.
That's true.
No. Figure it out yourself.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. Now you have your David Blaine information for the week. Appreciate it, everyone. Hope you had a good Labor Day holiday, and we'll be talking to you soon. Mm-hmm.